We're starting a three-part series of conversations starting tonight. It's called Air, Land, and Water. And we're partnering with our friends at the Metropolitan Planning Council to look at these three natural resources and explore the current landscape and the challenges we face in this region. Tonight, yeah, let's start with water. Pretty timely to talk about water as the international story surrounding Cape Town shortage gets more and more urgent. The South African city is on course to run out of fresh water by April. This April. Add that to the fact in the U.S. news that California is once again looking at drought conditions. It's a perfect time to talk about our region's relationship with the most precious of resources. I mean, we've talked about Lake Michigan, the goal of keeping contaminants out of the water in our local riverways, invasive species and waste. And of course, what's being done at the EPA, both federal and local, to keep this a top priority in our area. Tonight, my pleasure to welcome Cameron Davis to the program. The water policy expert was appointed by the Obama administration as a top policy advisor for the EPA back in 2009. Before that, he was the president and CEO of the Alliance for the Great Lakes. Cam, good to see you. It's been a long time.
It's been a while. Good to see you, Justin.
Welcome back.
And Josh, good to see you,
and
too.
And Josh Ellis returns to the program. He's a regular here on the Downly. He's a vice president at the Metropolitan Planning Council. Works with several water-related programs there. Josh, good to see you, bud.
You too.
All right, so why don't we start with you, Josh. What is the air, land, and water? Why are you guys taking this on, and why use the resources, no pun intended, at the Metropolitan Planning Council to look into these issues?
Sure. So I think it's no secret across the federal landscape we're at a moment of change and uncertainty. And so Metropolitan Planning Council, which seeks to inform public discourse here in the Chicago region on a whole range of urban and regional development issues, is in itself kicking off a series of events. Our lunchtime roundtable series, reflecting a year into the Trump administration, how federal policy is affecting systems we rely on. So the first one of those is next Thursday, February 8th at noon,
which I will be. I will be.
Justin is going to be our moderator, and Cam's one of our panelists. That will cover air, land, and water. We'll have a woman, Sandra Washington, who used to work for the National Park Service, talking about public lands, and a professor at the University of Chicago, Amir Gina, talking about air quality issues. And then later in the year, we'll have one that's more focused on housing, community development, and health. And then later in the year, one that's more focused on hard infrastructure, whether that's roads, bridges, pipes, pumps, that sort of thing.
We've heard a lot, Cam, obviously, in the changes in the EPA under Scott Pruitt, but we've also just heard a lot about the rolling back of regulations.
Right.
And, you know, when I talk about Californian drought conditions and you talk about what's happening in Cape Town, right away you go, okay, but Chicago has Lake Michigan and we have fresh water and we are going to survive when others, obviously more people are going to move to this area because of this lake. Should we be laid back and put our hands back and be like, we got this huge freshwater system, the Great Lakes. We don't really have to worry about anything.
No, not in this region. We can't be complacent ever be complacent. And when you take a look around the upper Midwest, you see places like Toledo that are struggling with people who have a tough time paying their water rates. Detroit, the same thing. Toledo, of course, had the shutdown in not too long ago, August 2014, because of toxic algae out in Lake Erie. And we even have in Door County, which a lot of us love to go to in the summer to, you know, get out of Chicago, up by that area, we have shallow well aquifers that are being contaminated by livestock manure. So, you know, even though we think about this region as water abundant, and it is, it's very water abundant, we have our share of challenges too, and they keep popping up. That's got to tell us something. We can't take it for granted.
You know, Cam, and I've talked to you numerous times about the health of Lake Michigan and the Great Lakes over the years,
right.
And I guess I asked the question from your time at the Alliance to now, I mean, being even in the being involved with federal policy at the EPA in Washington, have the lakes gotten better?
I mean,
the last 20 years?
I actually think that the lakes have gotten better with respect to toxics. The problem is that there are a bunch of other threats that are going on right now. One of the things that Josh and his group at the council, which does amazing work, has been working on is keeping Asian carp and other invasive species out of the Great Lakes. It's not just about pollutants and poison, you know, like Flint and drinking water. It's also about how organisms can get into the Great Lakes and then unravel the very delicate fabric of life that we have in this region. You know, it's amazing to me, you go to the Chesapeake and the salmon out there are iconic. I mean, and the soft shell crab in the Pacific Northwest, the salmon are iconic. Here we've got things like whitefish and perch, things that I grew up fishing for and that, you know, people's livelihoods in the past have been based on. These are important to us in this region. They help make up who we are. And so caring for these this really magnificent natural resource is critical.
Josh, I was going to bring you in just because I saw this week, it was the Illinois River had a toxic issue with some old toxic waste that seemed to be leaking. Yeah. We've had in the last year or two chromium leaks coming out of BP plants. And I mean, there's, even though, as Cam said, pollutants aren't what they used to be, it's surprising to me in 2018 that you continue to see these issues.
Not like the good old days.
Yeah,
you still do. I mean, we had an oil spill in Bubbly Creek a few months ago, right? Unclear where it came from, right? It wasn't reported on social media until likely a few days after it happened, at which point a lot of the evidence was gone. So a little unclear, but in a full-on oil spill. Oil on ducks getting removed with Dawn and paper towels like the Valdez,
wow.
Right? Couple miles
right
from
here,
where we sit right now, right? So we definitely still have issues, right? We've got leaks from industrial facilities on the lake down in Indiana that's leading to all sorts of lawsuits. We still have combined sewer overflows, although we're getting better in that regard. Sitting here a couple feet from the Chicago River, we just have litter blowing into the rivers constantly, and one of the challenges with that is, one, who's responsible if litter just blows into the river, and two, no matter how clean the water actually is, and we're getting pretty close to swimmable water in our rivers, if there's coffee cups and worse just floating, no one's going to believe it, right, and so it's just this continual perception that no matter how clean the water is, it's not that clean, because you can see a McDonald's wrapper and whatever.
Cam, I have a curious question, just as someone who just observes the news, and when it comes to situations like we had this past year with chromium, a lot of times, and as you just mentioned, Josh, with the oil spill in Bubbly Creek, the public, it's not an immediate story, meaning it's not breaking news, we don't hear about it feels like the corporation or whoever's involved with it gets a little bit of time to figure it out before the public gets wind. Well, what's the EPA's role in that? I mean, is it the same thing? Is a big company like BP, are they not telling the EPA? Or does EPA know when you guys are working on an investigation before the public finds out about it?
Yeah. No, the EPA knows about these things. It's required that those kinds of incidents be reported. The thing that we have to remember is that the states are on the front line. You know, the EPA plays a backup role. They're the ones who, if the states aren't doing the job, the EPA is supposed to step up and do that. My concern is, and you'll hear more of this when we all get together on Thursday, is, you know, what happens when that enforcement and that compliance safety net seems to be gone, or it's weaker than it used to be because of politics. We have to step in as the public and make sure that we're continuing to demand that clean water is vital to all of us.
You know, that's such a great thing to say, because when you think about the federal programs like the EPA or even with the national parks and the other places and people that are going to be involved in this discussion, they are considered to be safety net when states or cities or municipalities fail. Mm-hmm. And you've seen from this administration more of an approach or a policy approach to say, we don't have the money and resources for safety nets. Mm-hmm. We don't have this for this. So you know what? States and cities, you're on your own.
That's I have heard and seen that argument through 20, 30 years, Josh. Yeah. You probably have too. And I have come, and I've seen it in all kinds of changes. I have come to the realization that it's not true. It is a matter of priorities. You know, we put our money in the places that are important to us. And time and time and time again, the public has said, water, clean water, is important to us.
I mean, it's the lifeblood. I mean, it is the end of... I don't understand how water is political.
Well, and here's the thing that I found working at the administration, where my job was to be in front of Congress. It was bipartisan.
Yeah.
You know, for as much as we read about the administration in Congress, we had Republicans and Democrats, you know, basically walking together on the Great Lakes. It's a bipartisan issue.
Yeah. I had the opportunity a few months ago. Senator Duckworth here, one of a junior senator from Illinois, has a leadership role for the Democrats on the Environment and Public Works Committee. And so I had the chance to go and testify in front of the Senate, which I'm sure Cam's done. It's an interesting experience, to say the least, when you bump into Rand Paul in the men's room and Elizabeth Warren in the elevator, and then you get to go testify in front of a bipartisan panel, Cory Booker, Kirsten Gillibrand, so these folks that you hear about, Boozman, whatever. And to a person, What do we need to do in order to invest in our drinking water systems? What are the problems? Is it contamination of the lakes? Is it over pumping of groundwater? What are we doing wrong with pipes and pumps? Why do we see communities throughout the United States leaking 25% of their water, 30% of their water? You treat it, you pump it out of your treatment plant, and it just leaks out of the pipe on the way to
somewhere. So they're asking those questions.
They're asking these questions and trying to figure out, regardless of party, right?
Hmm.
When it comes to the local level and the ability to invest, your point is well taken. The federal government used to, for any infrastructure project, right? It's not unheard of for highways like the interstates, right? Nine federal dollars to one local dollar, right? Or one state dollar, right? Which is a pretty great match rate, if you ask me, right? Probably unsustainable over the long term, and we don't do it anymore, right? So the funding priorities, the sort of funding principles document that's come out of the Trump administration recently, which is not inconsistent from past administrations, really, in this narrowing the amount of federal money that would be part of infrastructure projects, whether it's water, whether it's highways, whether it's anything else, down to saying that the max would be 20% of any project, right? And so that 80% has to be made up by the state or local units of government or potentially the private sector.
Right? Yeah, when you say 80% has to be made up by the private sector or municipalities,
or
you automatically realize that's not going to happen.
50 states in 50 very different financial straits and hundreds of municipalities in Illinois alone in very different financial situations, and you see this in their ability to invest in the basics.
Let me do this. Josh Ellis is the Vice President of Metropolitan Planning Council, one of the vice presidents there, works with several water-related programs. Cameron Davis, former policy advisor at the EPA in the Obama administration, and we're talking about water in a new series we're putting on, Air, Land, and Water, which is in partnership with the Metropolitan Planning Council. Let's take a break, come back, we'll continue the conversation. Stay with us. It's Download 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. In studio tonight, Josh Ellis and Cam Davis are talking about water. Really a three-part series I want to do with the Metropolitan Planning Council about air, land, and water. And we start with water because, you know, it's a big issue, especially with Cape Town, South Africa. And the same with California, again, with the droughts. It seems like you can't get ahead of that stuff. And we talked about pollutants in the Great Lakes, but let's talk about drinking water. I'm fascinated by the fact that we don't have it almost feels like we've seen the news where some of the collar suburbs and people are doing either it might be groundwater, it might be well water, it might be some sort of policy, but they're not necessarily pulling water from Lake Michigan. There's no organization here, and they find themselves charging a ton of money, and they don't have the resources to get the resources. How do we deal with that? How do we, let's start right there, Cam. How do you deal with the fact that each town does water differently?
Yeah. Well, so one of the things that I think is almost a universal, I won't say answer, but it's kind of a response to when water is running low is conservation, conservation, conservation. You can never conserve enough. And it's probably the easiest thing to do. It's probably the thing to do that saves you the most energy, which in a lot of cases for municipalities is one of the largest or the largest item on their utility bill and their expenses. So conserve is absolutely critical to do. And when it comes to aquifers, groundwater, things like that, we're really pumping hard from the ground. And you can't keep doing that. We can't keep sustaining that. One of the things that I think we need is a national water sustainability policy. We don't have that here
in
this country.
What do you mean we don't have that?
We don't have any kind of cohesive policy for how we are to be managing water. And the reason is because it's always been kind of the purview of the states. You leave it to the federal government, doesn't want to get involved, it's because it's the states. But you look at these aquifers and they move across state boundaries or underneath state boundaries. They don't stay confined to one municipality or one state. And I think it's courting a lot of trouble for us to not be taking the long view and thinking ahead in terms of how we ought to be conserving and managing our water supplies.
It seems like, I mean, whether it be clean power or whether it be pollution or, I mean, you see it in so many other ways that even when it comes to our environment, regardless of administration, people like policies. They like plans. I mean, is it time for people to convene on a national water policy?
Yeah. I mean, so to the extent that we have national water policies, it's related to water quality, right? I mean, we have laws and rules requiring how clean the water is when it comes out of the tap in your sink. What we don't have are national sets of standards for the sort of supply-oriented management of that, right? What should the national standard be for the acceptable amount of leakage from a pipe system, right?
Right.
What do we have a target for per capita consumption and that we can use it as an incentive to get perhaps some of the groundwater communities to rein things in a little bit or to encourage more conservation? So it's an ironic thing. In 2011, which is the last time we had a real drought year around here, water usage actually jumped, right? It wasn't raining as much, and people thought they needed water to water their lawns. And so some of our North Shore suburbs, water consumption jumped during the drought by 400%. We had communities having to buy water from neighboring communities so that people could put it on their lawns so that they would stay.
This goes to the issue, Cam, you mentioned about conservation. Yeah. We don't know what to do in this area with conservation. There's no way. If we ran into another drought and it got to California proportions, Illinois and all of the townships and municipalities and suburbs, we wouldn't even know what to do.
Your point about Cape Town coming close to running out of water here in about 2.5 months. In 2011, we had reservoirs in the southern part of Illinois that had 3 months left on their clock. And then it started to rain. And because it started to rain, we haven't actually addressed the systemic issues that were leading to that drawdown. We had conflicts in court between hydroelectric dam operators and farmers trying to figure out who got the last amount of water in the river to do what they needed to do. So we certainly have water conflict in this state, and I'm not sure that once it starts raining that we actually solve those issues.
You guys, sorry, we can talk about this. Yeah, thanks for bumming me out.
I'm thirsty.
Yeah. Cam, you're running for Water Reclamation Commissioner. When did this happen?
Yeah.
You're not even on the ballot.
I know. There was a vacancy that opened up because of a very nice guy. Tim Bradford passed away, unfortunately, and untimely. And the only way to get on the ballot is a write-in. So I'm running as a write-in for the Water Reclamation District. And early voting starts March 5th, goes into the primary on March 20th.
Wow. Well, good luck with that. I would like to see who writes
in on
water reclamation.
Well, they say it can't be done, and I disagree. We live in an era of social media, and people are fired up. I think people can write a person's name into a ballot. Call me optimistic, but I don't think it's too heavy of a lift for our water.
And on Thursday, there's going to be a panel discussion about air, land, and water.
February 8th, noon, at the Metropolitan Planning Council. Go to metroplanning.org. Go to the events page. You'll see all the information to sign up. Cam will be back for that, talking about water issues, and we'll have folks talking about the National Park Service and then air quality issues as part of a series.
Josh Ellis from the Metropolitan Planning Council. Cam Davis, a longtime water policy expert, as well as a former Obama administration policy advisor at the EPA. Guys, thanks for coming in. Thanks for doing it.
Thanks, Justin.
Thanks very much, Justin.
A lot of fun.